headlines. The Israeli attacks leave over 20 Gazans dead and nearly 400 Palestinian worshippers wounded at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds. Saudi Arabia says a Yemeni projectile has caused property damage in its Jizan province after the Yemeni army announced a successful drone attack on the kingdom's Abha airport. Also, a UN team investigating the crimes committed by the Daesh terrorist group in Iraq says it has evidence of genocide against Yazidis. Thank you for joining us. Beginning with our top story, Israel has conducted attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip, killing at least 21 Palestinians. The Gaza Health Ministry said the children, nine children were among the dead, while dozens more people were injured in the attacks carried out by warplanes, tanks, as well as naval and ground troops. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said it has fired hundreds of rockets inside Israel. It has once again warned the regime of escalation over its crackdown on Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds. Hamas has set a deadline for the regime to withdraw its forces from the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and the nearby neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah.
Hundreds of Palestinians were wounded after Israeli forces stormed Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Jerusalem al-Quds. This was the latest in a series of confrontations in the Holy City. Palestinian worshippers gathered at the mosque's courtyards after performing morning prayers to prevent a planned raid by Israeli settlers later Monday as part of their activities to mark what they call Jerusalem Day. It's the day when East Jerusalem al-Quds was occupied in 1967 and later annexed by Israel. Israeli forces raided the courtyards, firing tear gas, stun grenades, and rubber bullets against Palestinians to force them out of the holy site. However, the Palestinians remained steadfast.
What is going on in Al-Quds is a massacre, a comprehensive war to evacuate the city from its real residents. Palestinians across the world don't remain silent. People in Al-Quds are clashing with the occupation forces to defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They will never allow the settlers to desecrate their holy site.
After the clashes, Israeli forces decided to change the path of the Jerusalem Day flag march, so the settlers had to march through the old town's streets. The latest confrontations follow days of clashes between Palestinians and Israeli forces in the Jerusalem al-Quds. The clashes escalated with the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, after Israel tightened its grip on the city and prevented the Palestinians to freely perform their religious duties. Palestinians demand immediate action from Arab states. They say the only appropriate response to the crimes is immediate halt of any ties with the Zionist entity.
First of all, the Palestinian leadership must cancel any agreement with the Israeli regime. Then, he should call on the Arab states to stop any effort to normalize ties with Israel. We want urgent measures by the international community to stop the bloodshed in Al-Aqsa Mosque.
The tension has also been fueled by an eviction plan in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Jerusalem al-Quds, where Israeli settlers have waged a lengthy battle to take over Palestinian homes. Meanwhile, Palestinians held demonstrations in Ramallah and Gaza to denounce Israel's efforts to forcefully evict Palestinians from their homes in al-Quds. Israel's Supreme Court was to hold a hearing on the eviction on Monday, but the session was postponed due to the unrest in al-Quds. Israeli violence has sparked international condemnations. Meanwhile, the UN chief has urged Israel to exercise maximum restraint and respect the right to freedom of peaceful assembly. Amid soaring tensions in Jerusalem al-Quds, which has seen weeks of clashes, the Israeli authorities question whether a new uprising can now be inevitable. Arabating protests across the occupied territories have proved that Jerusalem al-Quds is a red line for Palestinians, and they will always defend it with all means possible. Mona Qandil occupies Ramallah.
Activist and commentator Rabbi David Feldman says Israel's settlement building activities are anti-Jewish.
This settler movement, sadly and embarrassingly enough, people who look like religious Jewish people, and they do everything which is anti-religious. And unfortunately, this whole provocation, this settler provocation against the Arab neighbors, the Palestinian neighbors, is totally ridiculous and anti-religious, is anti-Jewish. And unfortunately, people just see this antagonism, this violence going on. Unfortunately, what happens at the end of the day is action causes a reaction. Nobody condones, nobody condemns, but this is unfortunately what is happening. And unfortunately, we are standing here right now as we speak. And as we all know, we follow the news, the sad happening on the Temple Mount on Al-Aqsa. This is not supposed to happen. Jewish people lived in peace with the Palestinians for so long before all of this started. And unfortunately, this occupation is disastrous. We witnessed this bloodshed, this cycle of bloodshed from all sides, which is terrible. And unless people will wake up and understand that this occupation from the very beginning is wrong, this occupation from the very beginning is unjust, and is anti-religious, is anti-Jewish.
Iran's foreign minister has lashed out at Israel for its crackdown on Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds. In a tweet, Mohammad Javad Zarif blamed Israel for stealing people's land and homes and creating an apartheid regime. Zarif said Israel shot innocent worshippers inside Islam's third holiest site before Eid al-Fitr that marks the end of the fasting month of Ramadan. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan also denounced Israel's actions, vowing to mobilize the world to stop what he called the Israeli terror and occupation. Thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters also rallied across Turkey to denounce the Israeli violence. In Jordan, thousands of protesters took to the streets to call on their government to scrap its peace deal with Israel in the face of its crackdown around Al-Aqsa Mosque. Protesters held signs and chanted slogans while marching toward the Israeli embassy in Amman. Riot police blocked roads leading to the fortified embassy complex. Meanwhile, prominent rights group Amnesty International has condemned the Israeli violence, calling for an end to what it called brutal repression of Palestinian protesters. Several countries, including Germany, France, and the United States, called on both sides to show restraint. Also, earlier in Iran, people took to the streets of the capital Tehran to slam the Israeli violation of Palestinians' rights, including the planned eviction of Palestinians from their homes in a neighborhood in East Jerusalem al-Quds.
No more silence. Say a word. Pro-Palestine activists gathered outside the UN office in Tehran to demand that the United Nations take action with regards to Israel's expulsion of Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah and other areas in East Jerusalem al-Quds. Mostly student, the protesters called the Israeli move barbaric and against all international laws.
I'm here to support Palestinian rights. As for the recent crimes against humanity, these aren't recent. These have been around for a long time. It's more than, nearly 70, 75 years that the ethnic cleansing of Palestine has been an ongoing process. This needs to stop. And more people need to stand up to Israel and to the crimes that they're committing. We need to talk about this and we need to stop this.
We have come here to voice our solidarity with and support to our brothers and sisters in Palestine and to condemn the inhumane behavior of the Israeli regime against Palestinians. We regard the UN silence as complicity in the crimes committed by Israel.
Israeli forces have over the past days been attacking Palestinian homes in East Al-Quds Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, trying to force the Palestinians to abandon their residences in an attempt to make way for the construction of new illegal settlements. The regime has so far wounded dozens of Palestinians protesting against the decision made by an Israeli court.
During the past days, we have witnessed heinous crimes against the innocent Palestinian people by Israel. It's interesting that the U.S. claims to be the defender of human rights. I wonder why is Joe Biden keeping mum and not condemning the Israeli violence? Where did all the human rights slogans go?
Israel has for 7 decades been pressing ahead with the construction of illegal settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories and continues to deny millions of Palestinian refugees the right to return. Several attempts have been made to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the last of which was the so-called deal of the century, proposed by ex-U.S. President Donald Trump, which is dismissed by Palestinians as an attempt to trade their identity and history with money.
Rights activists here say Israel's recent atrocities are a proof that the so-called peace plans by the West cannot defend the rights of Palestinians and will only make the Israeli regime more insolent in its crimes in Palestine. Protesters say it's time to take action, as any silence by the international community is tantamount to a green light to Israel's violence against Palestinians. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Political commentator Ken O'Keefe says the Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip are crimes against humanity and war crimes. Here's more.
It is war crimes, crimes against humanity, And 100%, I mean, the list of crimes committed by the Jewish state of Israel are so absolutely off the charts that it couldn't even be measured. But we still don't have the law operating in the world, do we? And my birth nation, the United States, will also be paying for many crimes in Afghanistan, Iraq, even Vietnam. You can go on and on. There are children being killed and body parts are flying in Gaza because, well, courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer. Netanyahu, of course, the man should be rotting away in a prison for the rest of his life, and that would be kind, but he gets the favor of all of our governments in the West. He gets cover from us and money.
The UN team investigating the crimes committed by the Daesh terrorist group in Iraq says it has evidence of genocide against Iraqis Yazidis. Head of the inquiry, Karim Khan, said the team has found, quote, clear and convincing evidence that the crimes against the Yazidi people clearly constituted genocide. He said the team has also identified the perpetrators responsible for the crime. Daesh overran the Yazidi heartland in northern Iraq in 2014. The group massacred thousands of people and displaced most of the 550,000-strong community. Meanwhile, Nobel Peace Prize winner Nadia Murad, who was enslaved and raped by the terrorist group, pleaded with the UN Security Council to refer Daesh to the International Criminal Court. Saudi Arabia says a Yemeni projectile has fallen in the kingdom's southern province of Jizan. Saudi Arabia's civil defense said the projectile dealt damage to a building and some cars in a border village there. No injuries were reported. Earlier, Yemeni army spokesman Yahya Sari said a Ghassef 2K drone successfully hit a military target at Saudi Arabia's Apa International Airport, located in the southwestern province of Asir. He said the operation was in response to Saudi Arabia's continued war and siege on the impoverished nation. The kingdom and its allies launched their war on Yemen in March 2015. Tens of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have been killed in the onslaught. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell describes efforts to save the Iran nuclear deal as an extremely delicate and sensitive process. The bloc's top diplomat has been discussing the topic with EU Foreign Affairs Ministers in Brussels. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
A lot of work is needed and time is limited. That's what Josep Borrell, the EU's foreign policy chief, has told a ministerial meeting in Brussels with respect to ongoing talks in Vienna to try and save the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal.
It's an effort to make the US to go back to the agreement in order to have a full compliance for Iran, which is the best way to ensure the exclusively peaceful nature of Iran nuclear program.
Tehran insists it has zero ambition to build a nuclear bomb. The idea that Iran wants a nuclear weapon is peddled by Tel Aviv and the Israel lobby in the US, according to unbiased security experts.
Where is the evidence, they ask? How many times has Washington launched attacks on foreign nations without any justification?
Critics say the West's meddling in the Middle East has caused immeasurable damage.
Well, the biggest failing of all was the, you know, intervention of the United States into Iraq, after 9/11, because this created a security vacuum.
EU and US foreign policy was recently debated in the European Parliament.
We must work for stability in Iran and Iraq and Lebanon, a peace in Syria and Yemen, and oppose the US-Saudi attempts to isolate Iran.
The Iran nuclear agreement, underpinned by the UN, was thrown into flux when Donald Trump pulled the US out of the accord 3 years ago this month. He then imposed harsh, illegal economic sanctions on Iran. Saving the nuclear deal would help to bring stability to the region, it has been suggested.
You know, Middle East, it is a vital area. We should to make it a quiet area because, you know, it is on the middle of the trade road, so it will affect all the economy situation in all the world.
Josep Borrell has told EU Foreign Affairs Ministers the talks in Vienna, Austria are extremely delicate, sensitive and intense. He says he's optimistic and a window of opportunity will stay open until the end of this month. Nothing is agreed until everything is agreed, he insists. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Leading human rights organizations have urged the United Nations to create a commission to conduct an independent inquiry into police violence against African Americans. Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and the American Civil Liberties Union were among dozens of groups that made the request to UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet. Members of 171 families of the victims of police brutality in the United States also signed the letter. Signatories believe a robust international accountability mechanism would further support and complement efforts to dismantle systemic racism in the United States. The letter comes before Bachelet presents a report on systemic racism and violations of international human rights law against African Americans by law enforcement agencies in June. The Taliban militant group has announced a nationwide ceasefire that will take effect when the three-day Eid al-Fitr holiday begins on Thursday. This comes after weeks of increasing violence that has gripped the country. Our Kabul-based correspondent, Amin Alami, has more for us.
According to the spokesperson of Taliban, the group's leadership has ordered all members to stop fighting during the 3 days of Eid al-Fitr that mark the end of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan.
Taliban also say the group's leader has ordered all members not to enter government-controlled areas during the three-day ceasefire and that they would not allow government troops to get into Taliban-controlled areas in the same period.
The declaration of three-day ceasefire by the Taliban has been widely welcomed in Afghanistan. Locals who are bearing the brunt of violence say they expect the Taliban to agree to a permanent ceasefire in the hopes that it would lead the country to a lasting peace.
Nonetheless, we welcome the three-day ceasefire by the Taliban, but I think temporary ceasefires are not viable long-term options to put an end to our misery. So we want the Taliban to approve a lasting ceasefire instead of insisting on war.
Taliban approved the three-day ceasefire as Afghanistan witnessed a sharp increase in civilian deaths due to rising terrorist attacks, such as car bombs or explosions over the recent months. On Saturday, three separate heavy explosions went off close to a girls' school in western Kabul. 68 civilians were killed, most of them young girls. Also, over 160 others were wounded in the incident. This grim attack occurred just 2 days before the Taliban militant group declared the Eid ceasefire. Meanwhile, many have called on international players to put pressure on the Taliban to approve a permanent ceasefire.
The ceasefire is good news for us, but our oppressed people deserve lasting calm and security as they have tolerated a decades-long bloody war. Therefore, some foreign states who had promised us to bring peace in our country must fulfill their obligation.
This is not the first time the Taliban approves a short-term ceasefire since it was removed from power back in 2001. In June 2018, the Taliban approved a three-day ceasefire. During that period, some Taliban militants entered Kabul and even took photos by Afghan armed troops. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Well, that does it for this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
EU leaders have given short shrift to a proposal by Joe Biden to waive COVID-19 vaccine patents as a way to increase supply, insisting that the White House should instead allow the export of vaccine doses and of the key ingredients. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Daniel Buffy. The piece is titled, US must export vaccine doses before waiving patents, say EU leaders. Stay with us for more of Daniel Buffy's article. European Union leaders have given short shrift to a proposal by Joe Biden to waive COVID-19 vaccine patents as a way to increase supply, insisting that the White House should instead allow the export of vaccine doses and of the key ingredients. At a summit in Porto, Portugal, a series of European leaders, including those who had previously appeared open to suspending intellectual property rights, said Joe Biden's idea was not a priority, and expressed frustration at the U.S. president's attempt to claim the moral high ground. The Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, whose Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio had commended the White House for the proposal earlier in the week, said it was more important that the American and British governments remove blocks on exports. Before getting to the liberalization of vaccines, other simpler things should be done, such as removing the export block that today the United States firstly and the British government continue to maintain, Mario Draghi said. This, I would say, is the first thing to do. The fact of liberalizing the patents, even temporarily, does not guarantee the production of the vaccine. Neither the British nor the American government has a formal export ban, but Washington has deployed the Defense Production Act to force manufacturers to fulfill domestic contracts ahead of other orders. While the British government's contract with AstraZeneca also prioritizes UK requirements. On Wednesday, 5th of May, Joe Biden's top trade advisor, Katherine Tai, had said that given a shortfall in vaccine production around the World Trade Organization, WTO, should back a waiver on vaccine patents, which would allow pharmaceutical companies to make copycat vaccines without fear of legal action by manufacturers such as Pfizer and AstraZeneca. The leader of the world's Catholics, Pope Francis, also offered his backing for the idea on Saturday, criticizing those putting the laws of the market or intellectual property above the laws of love and the health of humanity. But the German Chancellor Angela Merkel has rejected the proposal, saying it would dampen entrepreneurial innovation. BioNTech, a German company, owns a patent on a vaccine jointly developed with the U.S. pharmaceutical company Pfizer, which uses the latest mRNA technology. Angela Merkel doubled down on her opposition on Saturday, 8th of May, and put the onus on the United States to play a larger role in supplying the world with vaccines. I do not think that a patent waiver is the solution to make more vaccines available to more people, Angela Merkel said. She added, rather, I think that we need the creativity and the power of innovation of companies, and to me, that includes patent protection. Angela Merkel said innovation should not be weakened such that no rapid adaptations for virus variants can be found. The problem is not that people are sitting on their patents and not taking action, she added. Now that a further part of the American population has been vaccinated, I hope that we can come to a free exchange of components and an opening of the market for vaccines. Meanwhile, the European Council President, Charles Michel, who chaired the summit in Porto, Portugal, said the European Union was open to discussion within the WTO on the proposal, but that the bloc had doubts that patent waivers were the magic bullet in the short term and encouraged all the partners to facilitate the export of vaccine doses. France's President Emmanuel Macron also declared that patents are not the priority. I call very clearly on the United States to put an end to export bans not only on vaccines, but on vaccine ingredients, which prevent production, Emmanuel Macron said. He added, the key to producing vaccines more quickly for poor countries and developing countries is to produce more and to lift export bans. At the summit in Porto, the European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, announced a contract with drugs giant Pfizer-BioNTech for up to 1.8 billion doses of their patented vaccine had been concluded. The contract allows the European Union to donate doses contained within the contract, and Ursula von der Leyen said Europe was proving to be the world's pharmacy. She said those regions who are producing vaccines at large scale should share these vaccines through export. And again, I can only repeat, we are the only democratic region in the world producing vaccines at large scale and exporting. Earlier, pharmaceutical companies had reacted with anger and some countries with private astonishment at the Joe Biden administration's decision last Wednesday to back a temporary suspension of vaccine patent rights. One diplomat accused the United States of grandstanding and coming up with crowd-pleasing, simplistic solutions to long-term problems. The European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, had said earlier that the European Union's vaccination effort was accelerating, whilst it was also exporting more than 200 million doses of the vaccine, but it was also ready to discuss any proposal that addressed the crisis in an effective and pragmatic manner. Von der Leyen added, "That's why we are ready to discuss how the US proposal for a waiver on intellectual property rights protections for COVID-19 vaccines could help achieve that objective."
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us ponder on the divinely inspired words of God's last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, regarding the peerless qualities of his first infallible successor, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib. Peace be upon him. If you want to see the knowledge of Adam, the piety of Noah, the devotion of Abraham, the awe of Moses, and the service and abstinence of Jesus, look at the bright face of Ali.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters all over the world, assalamu alaikum and welcome to Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, we are trying to answer theological questions that are being asked by different questioners from around the world. Like always, we have invited Sheikh Murtada Karimi, Islamic researcher from Qom Samaria Schools, to answer the questions that we pose in this show. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam and thank you for having me.
Thank you for accepting the invitation. The question of the day that we want to ask it from the respected guest speaker, Sheikh Murtada Karimi from Qom Samaria Schools, Hawza Almiyaz of Qom, is concerning the month that we are in, due to the days and the month that we are in, the holy days of the holy month of Ramadan. There has been always some dispute over the starting date, and let's say the starting day of the holy month and the ending of it, which is the Eid al-Fitr. Sheikhana, the question is that why has always been a dispute by even scholars in these issues? The starting date is not quite clear, and there is no unity on this by or unanimous. There is no unity by the scholars and even by different communities, and the same goes with Eid al-Fitr. Doesn't it affect the fasting that we are making? Because, you know, at least at the end of it, which is the Eid al-Fitr, fasting is forbidden and is haram. So if, for example, I follow this authority, this religious authority, and I'm not following the other, so what is my duty like? I'd be thankful if you shed some light. And is there any date to finalize all these disputes and controversial discussions for some time? Or no, we have to continue and keep up with that.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I think that day would be the auspicious day of the reappearance of Imam Mahdi. May Allah hasten his reappearance. But
inshallah,
before that, it seems to for us to have this problem to be continued. But we should not think that it is only within the Shia communities and the followers of different Maraj al-Taqlid among the Shia. This is a problem for all the Muslims.
True.
And even it's not only a problem, I mean, from the side of the scholars. No, sometimes the problem is from the government and the countries. So to begin with, let me talk about the different criteria among different countries. In different countries, there are different criteria for announcing the lunar month, I mean, the holy month of Ramadan and the month of Shawwal.
Mm-hmm.
Some countries only consider the sighting of the moon valid. Some rely on the astronomical calculations, not mm-hmm. sighting. Some consider both of them, I mean, sighting and calculations. Some of the countries follow certain other Muslim countries. So each of these has different approaches regarding beginning of the holy month of Ramadan and the month of Shawwal. Again, for each and every one of them, still we have some differences. For example, when it comes to sighting the moon, some people believe in sighting the moon using naked eyes after the sunset of the day, which is previous to the first of the month. It seems to be practiced in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Morocco, and some. And this is the viewpoint of some Shia scholars. The other viewpoint is sighting the moon through, some tools, like, for example, binoculars, especially after the sunset of the day previous to the first day of the month. It's practiced in Iran and some, this is the viewpoint of some Shia scholars. The next viewpoint is the verdict of the court for sighting the crescent. It is mainly practiced in Saudi Arabia, and some countries follow these countries.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, some countries do not have any certain criteria, and they follow the announcement of the beginning of the month by other countries. For example, some countries follow Saudi Arabia, like Qatar, Emirates, Oman, Yemen, Bahrain, Syria, Lebanon, Turkey, and Afghanistan. Some small countries, they follow their bigger neighboring countries. For example, it's been mentioned that people in New Zealand, they follow people in Australia, or in Suriname, they follow Guyana. And some communities in non-Muslim countries, they follow some Islamic countries. So you see, I wanted just to shed the light on the fact that it's not only the problem for the followers of, for example, Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah Sistani, Ayatollah Makarem. No, this is a problem for all the countries. And even we see that is not, something which is not seen among the, Sunni scholars and Ahl-Sunnah. Every year we see that even for the Sunnis, some countries they announce one day as the first day of the month of Ramadan or the day of Eid al-Fitr, but other Sunni people they announce another day.
Sheikhana, isn't it better for the Islam world to focus on this issue and reach to a conclusion and to reach to a solution for that? And it can be also a good factor for the unification of the Islamic Ummah. Why don't we pay attention to this issue? Yeah, it's true that it's not only among Shias and all the Islamic sects and denominations are actually suffering from such a problem. So isn't it a good element for the Muslims to come to one unique decision in this regard? And on the other hand, it also affects the nights of Qadr, which are very important nights to the Muslim and Islamic Ummah. And because by the different versions of the starting and ending of the month, so the exact nights of the Qadr are not clear to the people then. So is it a good solution to work on this?
You know, the point is that when it comes to, because in most of the cases, the difference is because of the fact that the scholars, both Shia and Sunni, they announce different days as the beginning of the month of Ramadan or the day of Eid al-Fitr.
Mm-hmm.
So why the scholars, they have differences, there are some reasons. First of all, there is a difference among the scholars whether when we sight the moon, it should be with naked eyes or we can use some tools like telescopes and binoculars and so on and so forth. So some scholars believe that it should be with naked eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And some believe that no, we can use some astronomical tools, and it's a matter of dispute among the scholars, and both of them they have arguments from the narrations, so we cannot blame one group and not blame the other. This is their viewpoint.
So I know, Sheikh. Respecting their viewpoints and their fatwas and ahkam decrees. Is it possible to make a unity in these viewpoints, to make it even one voice in the Islam world?
There are some ways, I will come to them, but whether they are practical or not is another issue. I will have some suggestion, but I don't think that at least all of them are practical nowadays. So the point is that there is a difference of idea. For example, the scholar A, he believes that it should be through the naked eyes. And mm-hmm. today, nobody has seen the moon through his naked eyes. So he cannot announce that this is the beginning of the month.
But does the unity of Muslim world worth to change their decree for the benefit of the Islamic unity?
I don't think so that he can change his idea, because if he comes to this conclusion that sighting should be through naked eyes, he cannot change his
mind.
But there
is a greater expediency, Sheikh, here.
For that, I will come to some solutions. For example, maybe that a scholar might stop declaring his viewpoint when he sees that the great majority of the scholars, they have announced another day. Mm-hmm. So it might be a solution, but whether these scholars are ready to accept that or not, this is another issue. The other reason for difference is that we know that every city, every region, every country has a shari'i so-called horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for example, the question is that if the moon is seen, for example, in Tehran, so is it valid for people in Pakistan, in Iraq, in Kuwait? So this is another matter of dispute among the scholars. Some believe that it could be valid for the same cities with the same Shari'i horizon, and some believe that no. So this is another reason why we have differences of idea among the Maraji'i Taqlid. The next issue is that the beginning of a month is proved through different ways. A person sees the moon himself. A person relies on others seeing the moon. Two just people, men, they say that they have witnessed the moon. And 30 days passing from the previous month. And the verdict of Hakim al-Shahr, the Muslim ruler, or as we put it, Wali Faqih. Now, when it comes to the last point, again, there is a matter of dispute among the scholars. whether the verdict of a wali faqih should be followed by all the scholars or not. If it was the case that all the scholars, they agree, especially among the Shias, that all the Shia scholars, they agreed that if Hakim al-Shahr, wali faqih, he passes a verdict that this is the day of Eid, then it is incumbent upon all the people to follow him, maybe we do not have all these problem. But again, the point is that this is a matter of dispute among the scholars. Some believe that no, every person should follow the viewpoint of his own marja'i taqlid. So for example, if I follow a marja'i taqlid who doesn't believe in the verdict of wali faqih to be valid for the beginning of the month, so naturally I will follow his verdict and his viewpoint.
But how come the verdict of wali faqih can be accepted for all the followers of other marja'i and authorities?
As I mentioned, this is a matter of dispute. Some scholars, they believe that the verdict of marja'i taqlid is one of the ways to prove the beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So if this is the viewpoint of that marja'i taqlid and a scholar, then it means that if wali faqih passes a verdict that today is the beginning of the month, all the followers of other maraja should follow him. But some of the maraja, they do not believe in this. They do not believe in the fact that the verdict of the wali faqih is a valid way to prove the beginning of the month. And that is why it caused some differences and problems.
Very true.
The other reason that why some we see some disagreements among the scholars is that as I mentioned, one of the ways to prove the beginning of the month is the witnesses of some people. So, for example, there are two people, they say that we witnessed the moon. Now, the witness of these two people might be convincing, and these two people are trustworthy by some scholars, but other scholars do not regard these two people as trustworthy or their report as valid. So my point is that we should not think that it's not an easy matter. It's pretty complicated. There are different reasons why the Muslim scholars, both Shia and Sunni, they come to this disagreement. It's not limited to the Shia. It's both among the Shias and Sunnis. Another point is, comes from some of the so-called kings of some of the Islamic countries. In some cases, they announce one day as the beginning of a lunar month. It adds to the problem again. As I mentioned, we can think of some solutions. One, especially for the Shia, is for all the scholars to pay attention to the verdict of wali faqih. And let me also mention another point. Proving the new month and the beginning of a new month is upon every mukallaf.
Mm-hmm.
So if for me it is proved that this is the beginning of the month for the fact that wali faqih has announced it, then for me it is the beginning of the month. Although my marja'i taqlid has not announced it. So the best way might be for all the people to follow the verdict of wali faqih.
Mm-hmm.
The next solution is that other maraja who have disagreement, they may not announce their viewpoint because they see, as you mentioned, it causes differences among the scholars. A third is that we can say that at the end of the day, if none of them is practical, then we can ask every person to act upon his duty. So for me, this is the day of Eid, so I pay Zakat al-Fitra, fasting is forbidden for me. For another person, this is the 30th day of the month of Ramadan, they fast, and every person respects the viewpoint of others.
Mm-hmm.
And the last solution is that those people for whom this is the 30th of the month of Ramadan, while for other people it is the day of Eid, maybe it's a good suggestion for them to go to a travel and not to fast on that very special day and to make up to the qada later. So on that very special day, they are not going to be fasting as a matter of caution because it might be the day of Eid. So they can join the people who are celebrating the day of Eid al-Fitr eating and drinking, and then later they can make up for the fast.
So we can expect seeing Muslims in parks and in, I don't know, in trips at the ending days of the month.
Not in the trips. Only for one day they go to some 22, 23 kilometers and then they come back to their home.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your explanations and good suggestions that you have just proposed. We have been talking, dear brothers and sisters, about the complex and, let's say, disputes among the scholars and Islamic denominations on the starting and ending days of the holy month of Ramadan. Dear brothers and sisters, my thanks for staying tuned and listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Ali wa Hussein. لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لا نخشى المحن.
The light.
Thousand drones have lit up the sky of a northwestern Russian town in a dazzling show commemorating the country's victory in World War II. The drones flew in formation and displayed images related to the deadliest war in history. The show ended with a giant dove of peace flying above mesmerized spectators. Russia commemorates its victory day on May the 9th every year. There is also an annual parade which the authorities decided to postpone due to the coronavirus pandemic. Humans have used the services of honeybees for centuries. Now, Dutch scientists have found a way to get help from these small animals in detecting the coronavirus. Let's have a listen.
We take the bees from a honeybee keeper here in the region, and we use a set of bees every day, and we put those bees in harnesses to fix them. And then we present coronavirus positive and coronavirus negative samples. And after presenting a positive sample, we always present sugar water afterwards. So in the end, the bees extend their proboscis after being presented a coronavirus positive sample. And in that way, we can train bees pretty quickly.
The bees indicate a positive COVID-19 result by extending their tongue to drink a reward of sugar water. Using these insects as coronavirus testing tools can significantly shorten the time spent on waiting for the result of a COVID diagnosis. It can also be very important in countries where there is not enough infrastructure and testing. Bees have an unusually strong sense of smell. They have already been used in some parts of the world to detect explosives and toxins.
A recently installed pizza-making machine is pitting itself against masterful chefs in the Italian capital, Rome. The tall red machine has become a head-turner in the city, which is famous for its pizza, one of Italy's most iconic traditional dishes. The customers get to choose among four types of pizzas plus a drink. A few minutes after placing your order, you'll receive the dish on a platter fresh out of the oven. But Italians say the pizza cannot compete with those made traditionally.
The true pizza is made from a wood oven. I wouldn't even take into consideration eating a pizza from a machine.
So far, the reception from people has been far from favorable. However, some say the final product can be acceptable considering its price or if you are in a hurry. As many countries accelerate their coronavirus vaccination programs, life is gradually getting back to normal. Now, residents of a nursing home in the Spanish capital, Madrid, finally get a chance to go out after months of isolation. Around 50 elderly residents and staff from two care homes went on an excursion to the Madrid Zoo after they were vaccinated against COVID-19. They visited some of the park's inhabitants, from pandas to elephants, while sitting on a miniature train. They hailed the idea, saying they were bored with staying at the nursing home with no visitors.
It's good to leave, to break the monotony of the nursing home, especially as we have been confined there for so long. It's nice to get outside, so I decided to go out and see the world.
The director of the care home believes the experience makes the residents forget about their pains. Around 43,000 seniors died of COVID-19 during the first wave of the pandemic in Spain. The elderly population was among the first group to receive coronavirus vaccines in the country. Now, looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawn mowers. Ship may be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawn mowers. The project includes 25 sheep of four different breeds. They are going to graze on a one-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Over the past few years, people have become more aware of the detrimental effect of littering to the environment. Bolivians have launched a nationwide campaign aimed at protecting the country's scenic spots and waterways from human waste. Hundreds of volunteers were seen cleaning up the Valley of the Souls near La Paz, which is famous for its unusual razor-sharp rock formations. The volunteers, aided by heavy machinery, managed to collect over 15 tons of plastic waste and construction rubble from the rocky canyon. Activist Carola says people needed to speak up more in defense of the nature, which is increasingly coming under threat.
It is incredible how we can find jewels like this painting amid all these piles of rubble and garbage, and we are surprised and ask, what is going on with nature? It is a tourist place where many people come. The Valley of the Souls is very special, and many people have gathered together here to be a voice for nature and to get it the care and respect it deserves.
Last month, the campaign also cleared the highland lake of Uru in western Bolivia, which is said to be full of more plastic than water. Campaigners say they will continue their efforts until no place with garbage is left in the country. exhibition in the Belgian province of Wallon-Brabant has put on display several objects belonging to French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte. A belt with the word Waterloo written on it, a flintlock pistol, Napoleon's shoe, bathtub, clothes, and several other objects are all displayed in the exhibition. Many of the items are brought from Napoleon's last residence on St. Helena Island. The curators say the exhibition aims to show Napoleon's daily life and the way he lived. Earlier this week, an auction was set up in France offering Napoleon's blood-stained cloth, estimated to be sold for $18,000. May 5th marks the 200th anniversary of Napoleon's death. People always try to find new ways to connect and support each other at the moment of crisis. A young Indian is one such example who is saving lives by providing free oxygen to coronavirus patients. 32-year-old Shanawaz Sheikh is a resident of India's commercial hub, Mumbai. He launched the campaign during the first wave of the pandemic when his friend's cousin died of COVID-19 on the way to hospital. Now popularly known as Oxygen Man, Shanawaz sold his car last June and used the money to buy oxygen cylinders for those in need. He and his team have now set up a control room to deliver oxygen to patients. They send the cylinder as soon as they receive a call from a COVID patient or a family.
Without oxygen, a patient can't live. They need it very badly, even in the ambulance on the way to hospital. If Shanawaz wasn't helping, patients would likely not even make it to hospitals. They would die on the way.
Shanawaz says his team helped nearly 5,000 people during the first wave of the pandemic last year and is planning to help as many as possible during the second wave. His initiative is earning him much praise on social media, with many calling Shanawaz and his team real heroes during the crisis.
Archaeologists have found a meaning for mysterious new findings in a cave in Mexico. They believe they are part of ancient Maya rituals. Around 1,200 years ago, some people imprinted their hands on the cave walls. The 137 prints are in two colors, black and red. Experts say the black ones represent death, while the red paintings are a reference to war or life. An analysis of their size also shows that the handprints were likely made by children as they entered puberty. The subterranean cavern, called Chichen Itza, is located nearly 10 meters below a tree which Mayans assume sacred. Little hotels for little bees. In Colombia, wooden structures are built for the insects to rest after a hard day. The Oporo Valley Metropolitan Authority has installed the hexagon-shaped rooms for bees of all shapes and sizes. Every day, volunteers clean the bamboo hotel with paintbrushes. Designers say the bee hotels are made to protect some species that are more vulnerable.
These little bees are supremely sensitive to poisons, and since they don't produce honey, no one speaks up for them. So we're coming to the rescue.
Designers say bees are losing their habitat all over the world, so the hotels could be a means of survival. Colombia has registered 550 varieties of bees within its borders.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
please log on to our website,